Sawbones is a show about medical history, and nothing the hosts say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. It's for fun. Can't you just have fun for an hour and not try to diagnose your mystery boil? We think you've earned it. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy a moment of distraction from that weird growth. You're worth it.
All right. Song is about some books. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sawbones, a marital tour of misguided medicine. I'm your co-host, Justin McElroy.
And I'm Sydney McElroy.
What's going on, Sid? How are things going?
How, like, for me,
yeah,
for
we haven't
the
talked
world?
To, we haven't talked a little bit.
I mean, that will give our listeners a strange view of us. We do talk every day.
We haven't
day.
Seen each other since the last recording. I mean...
No, we... Is this an illusion we're creating?
This
that we don't see each other?
No, this
except,
is a different Justin. This is like...
Oh, this is podcast Justin.
This is Time to Shine Justin.
Time to Shine Justin.
Time to Shine Justin only shows up for podcasting.
I like the idea that if you were like a series of like dolls, there's like regular Justin and then there's Time to Shine Justin. They do that with JoJo Siwa because the kids love the JoJo Siwa dolls and they have different like, there's like pop star JoJo Siwa and like the regular like hanging out casual JoJo Siwa. There's different ones.
There's the Taekwondo Justin that comes with his own dobok and different colored belts. There's Justin's in the shop, which is like a woodworking one that has like protective gear and aprons and like your own glue comes in it and some wood for free is in there. And it's like a whole line of dolls.
Does it come with my storage space that's now filled with a woodworking shop?
Huh.
And like a little picture of me looking sad.
Can I tell you something? That's actually not something you want to discuss with Time to Shine Justin. That's really more like a regular Justin or husband Justin kind of discussion. I'm all just right. here to be effervescent and charismatic. And shine. I mean, I don't know how else to put it. And you're right now, you're dulling my shine a little bit, which many inspirational images on Facebook say that I'm not allowed to let anybody do.
Well, I just can't help but be me all the time. Mm, there's just the one me. Must, what you see is what you get.
That, a WYSIWYG. That must be exhausting. Actually, that sounds exhausting. Well, what is the Sydney that I see? What am I getting from her today?
Well, for me today, just this sort of fits in with Time to Shine Justin.
Okay.
Because perhaps Time to Shine Justin is made of star jelly.
Oh boy, I love that.
Do you love that?
I love star jelly. I actually lather it up on my face before every time that I shine, so it actually is perfect.
Have you actually heard of star jelly?
Never heard of star jelly in my entire life.
I had not either. Thank you, Courtney, for letting me know about star jelly because I had not heard of this and now I'm fascinated and now we're going to do a show about it. There is a medical reason to talk about star jelly, believe it or not. Justin.
Sydney.
With all that is going on, are you surprised to learn that apparently there has been some sort of gelatinous ooze that's either coming from the earth or most likely people thought falling from the stars, falling from the sky for centuries?
Ooze has been falling from the sky for centuries and nobody noticed?
And nobody knew. Well, some people know, and that's why we're doing an episode about it. But we didn't know.
I certainly didn't.
Do you ever, when you're taking your...
My constitutionals.
Yes, your morning stroll through the dewy fields of Huntington. I don't know.
Yeah, through the thicket.
Yeah, do you... on the moors. When you're taking your strolls on the moors. Mm-hmm. I wish we had moors. Do you ever find... like goo that you can't explain on the ground, like jelly or goo, gelatinous gooey.
Yeah, but
a gooey. Yeah, goose?
But several summer camps have taught me to just leave that where it is.
Have you ever seen that?
No,
me neither. Okay, so what are we talking about? It looks like I'm going to get into what people think this is. So don't worry, we will get there. But star jelly looks like a translucent pile. Of jelly. It's like sort of a, it's not completely clear. Like it's not see-through. Like I said, it's not transparent. It's translucent and white and cloudy and jelly. Okay.
Yeah.
Various sizes, like throughout time, throughout different encounters with this substance. And it's been found all over the world, just sort of lying about the ground. Like I said, the stories of color and shape stuff, they vary sometimes. And the effects of it also vary, like what it does to you, if it does anything at all. Most agree that it just sort of dissolves into dust with time. Like if you leave it outside, it'll just kind of like dry, crumble, and fade away. The first mention of star jelly goes all the way back to a book written between 1305 and 1307 by a medieval English doctor named John of Gaddesden.
Sorry, say again?
Gaddesden. He wrote a book that was called the Rosa Medicinae, or also called the Rosa Anglica, which, by the way, I need to tell you about this book before I tell you about what he wrote about it. But anyway, so he wrote this book, and he gathered up a ton of, like, it's a medical text, and he gathered up a ton of, like, already known sort of medical writings from famous physicians and such throughout history. So, like, Galen's in there, Ibn Sina's in there, Dioscorides, a bunch of different, like, here's their thoughts on something. So he put that in the book. And then he wrote a lot of his own sort of like remedies. Like there's tons of prescriptions, basically, like recipes for stuff that he's made. And then there's a lot about him, just like a lot about who he is as a person and like what he's into and like his successes. Like here's a prescription for something. And by the way, I sold this baby to the barber surgeons for like tons of cash. And its main ingredient is tree frogs. Which is weird. But so this is this book that he wrote. He named it the Rosa Medicinae for the rose of medicine. He named it this for two reasons. One, because it's got five parts and a rose has five like petals.
I will have to take your word for it on that.
I don't know. That's what it
I'm not a flower guy. Five
sections. I don't know.
This is not a flower podcast.
This is a bad flower podcast. A rose has like five sections or something about roses. Anyway, the other reason he named it this is because the rose was thought to be the best flower, and this is the best medical book ever written.
A red rose just have five petals. There you go.
And then he felt like he had written the greatest medical book ever written, so it's the Rose of all medical books. It's the Rosa Anglica. There you go. This is this guy. You know the Canterbury Tales.
Yeah.
By Chaucer. You know there's a doctor is one of the travelers.
Oh yeah.
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 The physician in the Canterbury Tales may be based on this guy, John of Gaddesden. He may have been inspired. Like his like in the prologue, they list like his personality traits. Like he's smart, but he's very boastful, and his main motivation is cash. Like that's why he helps people, really, is not out of altruism, but like money. It may have been based on this guy. I just thought that was kind of a cool aside.
Yeah.
Anyway, he was the first one to write about star jelly, or Stella Terrae, star of the earth, what we would eventually call star jelly. He described it as a certain mucilaginous substance lying upon the earth.
Ugh, that's a rough word. Mucilaginous. That's tough.
It is tough.
That's
isn't
a
it?
Tough one.
Yeah. And he suggested that it's good for abscesses.
I'm assuming that.
Just moosh it on there.
Just moosh it right on your abscess. It'll be fine.
Moosh it on your abscess and it'll go away. And you find like.
No. He didn't say it would go away. I just told you to moosh it on your abscess.
That's true.
What happens next is on you.
He didn't guarantee. He just said it may be helpful for abscesses. That's a pretty benign statement.
Maybe.
It may be.
Maybe.
I don't know.
That'd be a fun doctor. It's like, maybe.
Maybe. You just ask him anything. Maybe.
Will this help?
Maybe.
Try it.
Maybe. There and similar from this initial description, you start to see like other descriptions of it pop up in various medical writings and dictionaries from like the 13 and 1400s. So, but the names vary. So there are lots of different, I'm calling it star jelly because that's kind of like the most common.
And the funnest to say, I think.
I like star jelly. But a lot of these things you may have heard are the same. We're talking about the same substance. So there's star fallen, star falling, star shot. Star slime, star slough, star slubber, star spurt, star slutch.
Star slutch?
Mm-hmm. The Welsh powder sir, which means rot from the stars. There's a word, uligo, which is a certain fatty substance emitted from the earth. These are all different.
God, a lot of rough words.
Yeah, a lot of ways to describe.
The opposite of cellar door over here with like the mm-hmm. the way it sounds.
Ooh. Star slutch.
Star slutch.
Star spurt. That's.
It's terrible.
Questionable. In addition to abscesses, there was another folk recipe that popped up that was like, hey, this might be good for puerperal fever or what we used to call childbed fever. We've talked about this before. It was an infection that after a person had given birth, they might get this infection. And we eventually learned it was because of not washing your hands when you deliver babies. Right. Remember we talked about this?
An important one.
So it would not help for that. Now, the common belief, like, why did we call it this? Mm-hmm. It was because people thought it was from stars.
Yeah.
People would see it on the ground and go.
It's a weird pick because the stars are in the sky and the jelly's on the ground. But yeah, I mean, it has to come from somewhere, right?
Well, but like, they knew of the existence of falling stars. Like, they would look up and see a shooting star.
Yeah.
And
then they'd look down and be like, oh, dunk, there's jelly on the ground.
The implication was that shooting stars eventually hit Earth.
And just get smooshed.
And they break apart, and this is what they're made of. If you could reach up into the sky and grasp a star, it would be a big gooey.
It would be ill-advised to start off with.
It would be a gummy, gooey, oozy thing, mucilaginous even. And so that was, okay, these are stars that somewhere they fall to Earth. And when they do, they bust open and here are the bits of them scattered among the ground. But because of that, not only did some people ascribe medical properties to it, but it also, of course, took on this sort of mystical, magical, poetic, you know, like mm-hmm. there was this whole other side to star jelly. It wasn't just about the medicine or like what it might do for you, it was this magical kind of thing. So you start to see throughout the 16 and 1700s this view of star jelly, and it shows up in a ton of different poems, which, like, I don't know that I would have realized, like, there's one from 1656 by Henry Moore. He writes that the stars eat, that those falling stars, as some call them, which are found on the earth in the form of a trembling jelly.
Mm.
A trembling jelly.
Trembling jelly, quivering.
John Suckling in 1641 wrote,
can't to break this episode.
As he whose quicker eye doth trace a false star shot to a marked place, does run apace, and thinking it to catch, a jelly up do snatch.
Lovely. A lovely poem.
And there are lots more. You can find lots of examples of people saying, like, go, if you see a falling star, go run over to where you think it fell, and you're going to find, as Sir Walter Scott writes, some foul jelly.
Oh, man. Imagine seeing a shooting star and be like, oh, no. Oh, no. That jelly's headed for my house.
We're going to see some foul jelly. In modern times, you see this, too. There is a Lovecraft story, The Color Out of Space, mm-hmm. that talks about, like, some sort of jelly from space, some sort of, like, ooze, like same kind of thing. And in 1950, and I'm going to go into some of the incidents where we have found star jelly throughout history. In 1950, there were four police officers in Philadelphia who saw something fall from the sky, they thought, went to the place where they thought they saw it fall, and according to them, found a domed disc of quivering jelly, 6 feet in diameter, 1 foot thick at the center, and an inch or two near the edge. They tried to pick it up, and it dissolved into an odorless, sticky scum.
Gross.
This story from 1950 Philadelphia is the inspiration for The Blob.
Oh, really?
Yeah. This is why we have The Blob is inspired by star jelly.
Hey, that's huge.
The Blob is so much scarier than it should be, by the way.
I've never seen that.
You've never seen The Blob?
No.
I find The Blob truly horrifying, and it's
The Blob.
Just a blob. I find it very upsetting. And there were other reports of similar goos and jellies like that through all over the place. Lowville, New York, North Reading, Massachusetts, Kempton, Tasmania, Everett, Washington, throughout Ireland, Scotland, England. Like, you hear all of these stories all over the place. In one situation, instead of medicine, however, Like, so in all of these other situations, it was either just, ooh, we found some weird jelly, or like, hey, it has this beautiful mystical connotation, or maybe it could heal you in some way. Like, all of these different, I would say not very negative properties ascribed to it.
Okay.
But in one situation, it actually seemed to cause harm. I want to tell you about the Oakville Blobs. But before I do,
one of my favorite minor league ball teams, hands down.
Let's go to the billing department.
Let's go. The medicines that escalate macabre for the mouth.
Hi, I'm Jesse Thorne, the founder of Maximum Fun, and I have a special announcement. I'm no longer embarrassed by my brother, and me. You know, for years, each new episode of this supposed advice show was a fresh insult, a depraved jumble of erection jokes, ghost humor, and frankly, this is for the best, very little actionable advice. But now, as they enter their twilight years, I'm as surprised as anyone to admit that it's gotten kind of good. Justin, Travis, and Griffin's witticisms are more refined, like a humor column in a fancy magazine. And they hardly ever say bazinga anymore. So, after you've completely finished listening to every single one of all of our other shows, why not join the McElroy Brothers every week for my brother, and me?
Are you ready to binge watch something old?
The Greatest Generation is a podcast about Star Trek by a couple of hosts a little bit embarrassed to even have a Star Trek podcast. Hosted by me, Ben Harrison.
And me, Adam Pranica. We get into the critical, the technical, the science fictional aspects of the show we love, while roasting it and each other at the same time.
We've completed an entire series about Star Trek The Next Generation, and another one about Star Trek Deep Space Nine, and we've just begun Star Trek Voyager. So now is a great time to start watching a new Star Trek series with us.
So subscribe to The Greatest Generation on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and become a friend of DeSoto today.
Stepping up to the mound for the Oakville Blobs, it's Sydney McElroy.
All right, Justin. It's August 7th, 1994.
No, it's not.
In my story.
Got you already.
In my story. Okay. It's August 7th, 1994. We're in Oakville, Washington, and it's raining. I would guess that this is not strange. I feel like, doesn't it rain a lot up there?
In Washington, yeah. I mean, the times that I've been, it rains a lot. Most of the episodes of Frasier were about that.
So it's raining in Oakville, Washington. That's not particularly interesting. However, the next morning, everybody wakes up and after the rain, and they find small gelatinous blobs. Some people talk about them like the size of like half a grain of rice. So pretty small, right? Little teeny, teeny balls of jelly.
Orbeez, basically.
Orbeez have fallen from the sky. That is what people begin to assume. They find them all over the ground, and they think, well, these must have fallen from the sky.
Of course.
Because they're scattered all over the ground. And this would continue to happen, by the way, for the next 3 weeks, about six different times over the next 3 weeks.
That's bizarre. That would be very disconcerting.
One police officer who was driving in his patrol car when this started falling, his name was David Lacey, he noted that the reason he figured out it wasn't just rain, because it was very small, and you may have thought it was hail or something like that, but he turned on his windshield wipers, and they smeared across his windshield, the way you imagine, like, petroleum jelly or something on your windshield, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, they smeared across his windshield, and so he knew right away, like,
We got a jelly thing. This is a jelly situation we got on our hands.
What do you think the number for that is? You know, you got like a number associated with different crimes.
I don't know.
I don't know if there's a number for a jelly.
I can't come up with any funny numbers.
There aren't enough funny numbers, no. Except for the like ones that are funny because you're making sex jokes and
there's a sex number, the weed number. No, it's like the hitchhiker number. Mm-hmm. Those are the only funny.
You're
numbers.
A nerd.
Whoa.
Whoa. I'm just saying.
Yikes.
There was another resident, Dottie Hearn, who reported that she went out into her yard, discovered these jelly things, and picked one up thinking like, oh, hail felt.
Classic human behavior. Yeah. Oh, what's that? A mysterious substance. Let me grab that real quick.
Yep. Dottie picked one up and Dottie was surprised at how gooshy it was. She was able to just goosh it right up. And she was like, this is weird. I thought it was hail and it's not hail. Dottie was confused.
Okay. I just don't understand how you know about that. Because it's like, I've picked up lots of things, and sometimes I think this is gushy. And not once have I been like, hey, history, it's Justin. I picked up something gushy. Can you write that down?
So full disclosure, this particular part of the episode is from Unsolved Mysteries. I love the show Unsolved Mysteries. Anyway, so that's why we know Dottie picked it up and gooshed it.
I guess that Unsolved makes more sense than her calling history.
I don't know. I mean, I love the way that Unsolved Mysteries gives color to these stories, right? Like, gives you people and stuff. Like, I always admired that. I think that probably inspired some of what I do on here is try to unsolve mystery, the story, you know? Like,
yeah.
So, I, you know, maybe there wasn't a Dottie. Maybe Dottie is an amalgam of several different people that was created for the joy of television audiences.
Thank you for admitting that, because if you had not, and some internet sleuth was like, I don't want to ring my alarm bells, but I'm pretty sure this part's from Unsolved Mysteries.
It is. It's from Unsolved Mysteries. The Oakville blobs are real. That happened. Now, all of these characters, I don't know exactly, but you're going to get the sense. The Oakville blobs are real. Okay. This did happen.
Did the police officer, is he Unsolved Mysteries too?
The names have been changed to protect the innocent. I don't know.
So there's footage of a reenactment of David Lacey.
Yep. Officer David Lacey.
With his windshield wiper smeared.
Gooshy windshield wiper.
Okay. After Dottie picked up the gooey ball, she started feeling bad.
Because she did that. Because she had, like, why'd I do that? It's gooey.
She started to have difficulty breathing. Her vision got blurry.
Mm-hmm.
She started becoming nauseous. She got vertigo.
Oh my gosh, that's a lot all at once.
About an hour into her symptoms, her daughter, Sunny Barclift, found her passed out on the bathroom floor, sweaty and pale. Why aren't you reacting to this?
Because it's a made up thing you saw in Unsolved Mysteries time.
No, the Oakville blobs are real.
Okay.
Okay, so she anyway.
This is like turned in.
She took
this show's turned into your own cryptozoological expedition here. This is medical history.
The Oakville blobs fell. Do you want me to, like, I could give you the dry version. Some gooey stuff fell from the sky and nobody knows why.
No. I much prefer your episode recaps.
So she went to the hospital and she was there for 3 days. She had an ear infection. But it wasn't just Dottie.
Mystery solved.
David, the cop, got sick. Other residents got sick. There was a local human, Beverly Roberts. I don't know what her job in the town is, but she said pretty much everybody got sick and several dogs and cats died.
I mean, that's probably de rigueur. Dogs and cats do tend to do that, but sure. Okay, maybe it's blob based.
Let me say, I don't know if everybody in town got sick. I know that the facts are people found weird gooey stuff on the ground, and then some people did get sick around this time. Obviously, correlation does not equal causation. I am not implying that these blobs actually made people sick, but I am saying that people in town think the blobs made them sick.
Okay, got it.
That is definitely, people really did think that. Anyway, Sunny went out and got some of these gooey things and took them to the hospital and was like, can you check these out in the lab? Can you imagine that lab tech?
Hi, I've got some balls of goo. Can you take these to the lab?
And check them out. And reported that there was like a white blood cell from a human, but like that was all that they saw. They didn't know what it was. So then it was sent to the Washington State Department of Health, and a microbiologist there, Mike McDowell, analyzed it, and he found two bacteria that are usually found in the human digestive tract.
This is normally when I'd call unit get the doctor in here.
We need the doctor.
Yeah, to check this stuff out.
This is a slow invasion. So anyway, what was it?
I don't know.
Nobody knew. There was a theory, like some people tried to proposed the idea that perhaps an airplane flying overhead had dropped what I have learned is called blue ice.
Oh, the from the toilets.
Yes. But two reasons that doesn't really work is that, one, they're not really supposed to drop it midair.
That would be wild.
That would be wild would if be that's wild. How that worked.
We're not, we need to make better time, quick. Drop the dookie ice.
That's what it is. Yeah, it's bathroom waste.
That's what I said. Yeah. I was trying to say it politely, but.
Yeah. And it also, it has to be dyed blue. Like, it's an FAA rule. Like, you're supposed to dye it blue.
To make.
So it. You know what it is.
Oh, okay.
And this wasn't blue.
In case someone else found stinky clear ice and they were like, what could this be on the plane?
There was also a really great theory that, okay, during this time, and it was confirmed that the Air Force was practicing like bombing out over the Pacific during the same period of time.
That maybe they like nuked a whale and all its giblets flew up on the shore.
Well, you're close. Jellyfish. There was a thought that what if they're exploding jellyfish so hard that pieces of jellyfish are raining down on Oakville? People
probably
do not.
That
is not. Yeah, I think there are multiple. And also, like, they didn't find jellyfish DNA. So, but I don't think it was that.
That seems. Anyway, that one seems case closed on that.
Unsolved to this day. Some residents still believe it was a biological weapon that was accidentally tested on them.
Anyway. Yeah, pretty easy to avoid biological.
Star
just
Jelly,
don't pick up the goop.
Star Jelly story once takes us to Oakville, Washington, and there's this weird thing, and you can watch it on Unsolved Mysteries if you really feel inclined. I'm sure with the reenactments, it's even better. What other theories, though, other than these that we've talked about, what other theories have cropped up from some of these things? Well, there are a couple cases where we think we know what it was. So there was one time in August of 1979, there was a person, Sybil Christian, who lived in Frisco, Texas, who one morning came out to her front yard and found some purple blobs on her yard,
mm-hmm.
like little purple blobs. And she connected it to the night before the Perseid meteor shower had occurred.
Okay.
So the thought was like, oh my gosh.
Everything old is new again. This is definitely from stars again.
Uh-huh. Meteors are made of purple goo, and we didn't know. However, what they eventually discovered is that there was a battery reprocessing plant, which used caustic soda to clean impurities from lead in the batteries.
Mm-hmm.
And the resulting stuff, like the stuff that's made as a byproduct, is purple.
Oh, okay.
So the thought was that maybe it had gotten, which isn't great. Like, that's disturbing in a different way.
Yeah.
Right?
Because like, fun disturbing.
No, yeah. It's like, well, this isn't from space, but also why is it in my front yard?
Yeah.
That seems troublesome. So that was one instance of star jelly they thought they solved. There was another one in Dorset where they thought it was star jelly. They went and analyzed it, and it was sodium polyacrylate, which I guess is a kind of like super absorbent polymer that you can use in agriculture. So oh. like, and so like, if you put it out on your yard and then it rains, it will swell.
Like diapers.
So it would look like, exactly like the stuff in diapers. You wouldn't know it was there. Maybe. If conditions were dry, and so then if it rained overnight, you would come out and it would look like it had rained goo, when really it was just all of these things absorbed water overnight and became really large. So again, like Orbeez or the stuff that's in diapers, which there are a lot of science kits these days that kids play with, and that's what they come with. They come with Orbeez and the stuff that's in diapers. They love that stuff. There were some substances that have been found to be certain kinds of like molds or fungi. There's one called you guys don't want the scientific names here. I have the scientific names here, but like you guys don't even.
We don't.
Anyway, there are certain kinds of molds that look like slime, that look like goo. I mean, you can find these things, and that's just how that they naturally occur out in the world. Like
sure.
You would find them, and it would look like a pile of goo, and it's a fungus, it's a mold. There's one in one specifically, it's a kind of blue-green algae called nostoc that shows up after rainfalls. And so that has been a lot of cases of star jelly has probably also been nostoc. And it has kind of this own like mythology around it and like medical applications. And like that specific algae has its own kind of folklore outside of star jelly. But it is often included in the list of things that we have accused of being star jelly.
Gotcha.
there is a theory that seems to have been borne out by some evidence. Like, this may be all the times where we didn't know, where it wasn't one of these things I've already mentioned, it may have been this. So there was a theory that it was a substance that was regurgitated by an animal, that mm-hmm. we're seeing something that was inside of a creature and now has been puked back up.
Great.
Like a bird or something has puked up whatever this gooey stuff is.
Have to be a lot to cover a whole city.
So as you can imagine, over time, we have looked at this stuff under a microscope in different occasions to try to figure this out. And at one point, they found like what looked like amphibian DNA in one of these things, weird. Like a frog. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then in one, they found that and something like a predator DNA, like some sort of predatory bird. Okay. So then they started theorizing maybe this is the innards of like a frog or something that's been puked back up by a predator. And then in one sample of star jelly that was collected from Dartmoor in 1926, they found oviducts and ovaries and some eggs along with some other bits of a frog. Okay.
Okay.
So the thought is that what we are seeing is a collection of mainly this gooey jelly stuff that's in like the oviducts of frogs that have been eaten by a predator, and then the predator pukes back up this part of it because it's not easily digested or whatever.
Gross. Yeah, gross.
Especially if you find it in the autumn, this would be the time of year where
big time for frog eating.
The adult female frog carries a batch of eggs that they're ready to lay, mm-hmm. okay? As the eggs pass down the oviduct, they're surrounded by some jelly that, like, the oviduct walls squirt out this jelly mm-hmm. and surround the eggs in this jelly. It's not a lot. Like, it's a teeny, you can imagine, we're talking a teeny, teeny amount of jelly. So you might wonder, like, but that seems like it'd be almost microscopic. Like, how would we be seeing this with the naked eye? Because when it comes into contact with water, it expands. It gets really, really big. Mm-hmm. So if a predator eats the frog and digests bits of it, it will release this jelly. And then if they puke it back up, it will absorb water from the soil or if it rains or whatever. And you'll see this big mass of gooey jelly stuff mm-hmm. that's actually frog innards.
Such a gross episode, and there's no human body stuff in it.
So that's probably what a lot of the cases where they can't ascribe it to like a mold or a fungi or an algae or something that you use in your garden, or if you unfortunately have a battery reprocessing plant that doesn't seem to be regulated very well.
But why did it make people sick?
Why did it make people sick? I don't know. What I would say is this.
It's an unsolved mystery after all.
Did it make people sick?
No.
My guess is that it did not. Not to deny the residents of Oakville their story. Certainly, I don't know what happened. But my guess is that people just got sick around the same time this happened. And because it was scary and unknown and different, you connected the two events. And that's what we humans do, right? We do that constantly and connect events that actually maybe weren't related. We connect them because temporally they were related. And so that makes sense to us. It probably didn't make people sick. It probably doesn't help with abscesses or fevers. Most of the time, it's probably not an exploded jellyfish.
Yeah.
It's just some frog innards. And I mean, I wouldn't want to pick them up, but I guess.
Old Patty sure did.
That's the mystery of star jelly.
Still unsolved after all this podcast.
Don't know if it. I my guess is it didn't actually make people sick.
If you see jelly on the ground, don't touch it.
I mean, you know, I think it's a good rule of thumb.
Sure.
If you and I do this, like as a doctor, I have this habit where somebody will be like, "Look at this rash or bump or something," and my immediate instinct is to touch it.
Yeah.
Like bare hands, like, "Oh, let me touch that."
That's humanity.
And I always have to. I have this voice in my head that goes, "Put on gloves." And then I go put on gloves, and then I examine whatever I'm going to examine. So put on gloves. If you want to pick up star jelly.
Put on gloves.
There you go. Then you'll be safe. Or just don't.
Or just don't.
Take a picture.
Yeah.
Gram that.
Grammett. Hey, thank you so much for listening to our podcast. Thanks to the taxpayers for use of their salt medicines as the intro and outro of our program. Thanks to the Max Fun Network for having us as a part of their extended podcasting family. And thanks to you for listening. We sure appreciate it. Hey, we got a book in case you want a book of us. It's called The Sawbones Book. It's in paperback with stuff about pandemic and things like that. There's also a hardback version if you want.
And lighter stuff.
And lighter stuff. There's an audiobook version, too, that you can listen to, which is eerily like this podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Be sure to join us again next week for Sawbones. Until then, my name is Justin McElroy.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And as always, don't drill a hole in your head.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.